I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the fast and the funny. We're going to talk about the return of the Last Row Party, a fixture in Indianapolis 500 history. For 40 years, drivers who have qualified 31st, 32nd, and 33rd have allowed themselves to be roasted for a good cause. We're going to talk with famed drivers and Last Row Party veterans Lynn St. James, Steve Chassis, and Scott Goodyear, along with Indianapolis Motor Speedway President Doug Bowles and Linda Jackson from the Indianapolis Press Club Foundation. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI. Facebook is No Limits, WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the return of the Last Row Party here on No Limits today. The Last Row Party has been a fixture of Indianapolis 500 history for 40 years. It took a one-year hiatus, and it's on its way back. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Twitter is WFYI, and Facebook is No Limits WFYI. And I should do a disclosure. The Last Row Party is an event sponsored by the Indianapolis Press Club Foundation. It's a fundraiser for scholarships. I am the president of the Indianapolis Press Club Foundation, so I wanted to get that out there so that everybody knows. I got a great group of guests. We actually have a party today here on the show. We have with us in the studio famed drivers Lynn St. James and Steve Chassis, and Linda Jackson, who is also with the Press Club Foundation. We're going to be joined shortly by Scott Goodyear, and all three drivers are, among their many other achievements, veterans of the Last Row. And then we also have with us on the phone Doug Bowles from Indianapolis Motor Speedway, who's the president. I'd like to welcome all of you to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I want to start. Linda, tell us a little bit about what the Last Row Party is and what its history is, and then we're going to get into telling stories pretty quickly.
Absolutely. Well, it's a great tradition. It's been going on. This will be the 42nd year that we've had the Last Row Party. I've only been a part of the press club for about a year now, but I have attended the event in the past. It's a lot of fun. This year it moves into the Pagoda, and it's on May 22nd. Starts at 7 p.m., but it's a fun event. It's really for a good cause. It helps journalism students and provides scholarships to them, and we honor the Last Row drivers of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and it's good fun. Bob Jenkins provides a roast of the drivers, and it's a chance for the public to meet them as well.
Doug, I want to ask you a little bit, because you were one of the, pardon the pun, drivers for bringing the event back. It was largely because of you the event had gone on a hiatus, but you really wanted it to be part of the 500 season. Why was that?
Well, you've got 40-plus years of history there, and just making the Indianapolis 500 is a big deal, and Steve and Lynn and Scott and the people who started from the back row at some point in their career can tell you how big of a deal it is just to make the field. And the idea that we honor the folks that are on the front row and the pole sitter and others, obviously that goes on, but it's just as important for the folks that have had challenges and have only gotten to the last row. And Tony Kanaan just a couple of years ago just barely made it. And the stories of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the men and women who attempted to qualify for it, oftentimes the more compelling that last day of qualifying and the emotional roller coaster that those folks go through as they're trying to get themselves to the starting field, and it's a great way to recognize them through the Last Row Party. So I just didn't want to see it go away. And for me, I remember my first Last Row Party I went to was in the basement of the Press Club there on Capitol in the 80s, and I walked away with just a huge appreciation for the folks that made the Last Row, and more importantly, just the fun that the event itself really is.
Doug, we're having a little bit of distortion in your call, so I think we're going to let you go. But thank you very much for sharing the story. And we're really, I think, excited about being back at the Speedway and doing the party this year. Yeah. Well, Lynn, Steve, thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Sorry for the distortion.
Thanks. Not a problem. Could you share with us your memories of the last row party? And then after that, I'm going to give you a little bit of time. What is the funniest joke? Because the premise of the event is that you have to be a pretty good sport to show up in the first place. You spend about 10 minutes having somebody make fun of you in turn, and then you get a 31, 32, or 33 cent set check for your trouble. And a lot of it's safe to say a lot of the jokes are not necessarily G or PG. So I'll start first with your favorite memory of it, and then maybe what was the best joke that can be repeated over the radio and keep the FCC out of our lives.
Well, unfortunately, I don't remember what the best or worst joke was, but what I thought was really interesting was the caricatures they did of us on the back of the T-shirts. I was with Ed Pym and George Schneider that year in the back row, and I still have that shirt, and they're really funny to look at now, but it's a treasure because it doesn't matter where you start that race. Just to start that race is an achievement.
Lynn, how about you?
Well, I'm ashamed, actually, to say that I didn't know there was such a thing as a last row party until I got invited to it. So, and I just remember I was so emotionally exhausted and drained that I was like, what? I didn't get it until I just didn't know. I didn't understand it. I knew about the front row and the pole, and of course, every year just to be in the field. When I got invited to the last row party, that I guess I earned that invitation, I hadn't been bumped yet. So, and I got bumped in 98 and 99. I know what that feels like now. And so I was truly honored exhausted and just to finally make the field and know that I was in the field. But I didn't feel like it needed to be celebrated. That was the thing that I just didn't understand. It was for charity. I didn't understand it was a roast.
So that was a little bit of
so
a surprise.
I was in a shock. Yeah. I was in a state of shock over the whole thing, which is why probably I blocked it out because I can't remember what year it was now. And I couldn't remember. I mean, it's terrible. But I do remember the T-shirt. Steve mentioned that. And I do remember the T-shirt with the characters. I donated my jacket that I got. I donated all most of my memorabilia to the Henry Ford Museum because they have a permanent exhibit called Racing in America, and they are also creating a permanent archive for the history of women in racing. So that's why I wanted to make sure that I had all my stuff. And so that's with them.
And do they have the 32? And I think if my research is correct, you would have been at two of them because there was one year you qualified 32nd and one year 34th, or am I mistaken there?
That's a really bad year to bring up, okay? That was when I was the 16th fastest car, okay? When the rules changed. Oh, my God. Don't bring that one up. And I wasn't in that. I mean, we were our own row, and that was with Johnny Unser and I. We were 34th and 35th. Boy, did you bring up a rough subject. Can we just stay with the tradition of the last row, 31, 32, 33, and let it go with this, okay? I'm so glad they're bringing it back. I think it's great, and boy, you are brought up a touchy subject.
So we're talking about the last row party here.
Stay to topic.
On No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So I got to ask, I mean, one of the premise of the thing is that you get a 31 or 32 or 33 cent check every year. What did you guys do with the checks? Lynn, did you donate yours to the Henry Ford?
Yeah, I don't have it. I know I don't have it. Unless, Dick Simon might have had it because he was my team owner. So he might have just taken it. every penny was accounted for, you know, so no.
Steve, how about you?
I still have mine. It's framed with the with a little program that they gave us, a little, I don't know, it was 5x7 maybe, of the caricatures. So I have that and the 33-cent check in that frame.
So you weren't tempted to cash it at all, huh?
It's more work to cash it than it's worth.
Yeah.
It's more, the intrinsic value is worth much more than the 33 cents.
What do you remember about the night? I mean, that the party itself. I know, obviously, if you're a race driver, that's a huge week. And you've got all a zillion other things that are occupying your mind.
Well, I remember there was a little bit of liquor flowing that night.
Okay.
And we had some treats. And I remember being totally abused by the people that were doing the roasting, and I enjoyed watching them roast Schneider. But I didn't enjoy it so much until later. But it was fun. But yeah, they beat you up as best they can.
Now, who was doing the roasting the year you did?
Well, I remember Robin Miller was the chief roaster.
Okay.
But I don't know. I forget who else was doing it. It was the other guys that were in the sports media in town that were they were all good because they knew what we had done, good and bad, and they brought all of it up when you were up there on the podium.
Lynn, do you remember who did the roasting when you were?
It wasn't Robin, thankfully. I don't. I think it was Bob Jenkins. And actually, they were really They didn't rake me over the coals. They were pretty nice to me, I think. I don't remember them really tearing me up or anything. You know,
I'll
being embarrassed.
Speak to them about that.
Yeah.
See, retroactively.
I don't know. You know, who knows? But anyway, I just don't remember being terribly embarrassed other than I was just embarrassed because I'm such a – I honor the history so much, and I know so much about the history of the Speedway, not a huge amount, but I'm just saying I have so much respect for it that I was upset with myself that I didn't know such a thing existed, you know? So, but I don't, they weren't really bad with me.
Well, and it is kind of a tongue-in-cheek event, right?
Yes,
Linda,
absolutely.
You know, it's sort of like the Speedway's answer to Esquire's Dubious Achievement Awards or whatever.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think, and that's the whole point. I mean, everybody would come out and have a lot of fun and, you know, really the drivers, they take it well.
It's really about fun and raising money, I think, for a good cause. Yeah. And as Doug said, I think having a chance, because there were a lot of fans there, and so you know it was a chance for the fans to, because sometimes it's hard to get to us, you know, just literally logistically, whether they can't get in the garage or whether we're just, you know, bombarded and it's really hard to get to us, and then this is one opportunity where they can actually get to these drivers. So so I mean, it has a really good purpose for sure. I'm glad. I didn't realize it had gone away either.
Now I gotta ask, because the fact that you had made the field was historically significant.
The first year.
Yeah, the first
92.
Year. Yeah.
And then they thought I was going to go away.
But, you know.
And I came back.
Well,
and
yeah,
I came
and
back.
Did,
and I came
did.
Back.
Yeah.
And I got better.
Yeah. But at an event like that, the fact that you didn't know it was a roast the first year, I mean, were you somewhat conflicted? I mean, it was a historic achievement to be there, you know, to be part of the field to begin with.
Do a whole attitude adjustment. I did. I mean, I went in and I was like, just, what is this? And then, okay, I'm here. And then it became this big roast fun, you know, and really not a lot of fun going on the month of May from a driver's standpoint.
Yeah.
I mean, it's enjoyable, but it isn't jokester stuff, you know. I mean, we really are serious about this. And so I had to switch gears, you know, mentally in just about every way. Which I did, but, you know, I still was in a bit of a quandary, I guess, about the whole thing.
I don't want you to feel bad about not knowing about that event, because there was a bigger event, and this happened back in 1985 when the March cars were the big cars here. Like Wednesday after the banquet, the 500 banquet, Roger Bailey came up to me and he said, no one told us about the prize giving. They didn't even know there was a Speedway banquet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
sometimes it was inside information, I think, you know. I mean, not everything was always so publicly and, you know, just generously aware, you know. There was these a lot of private little parties that go on sometimes, you know.
Well,
I've never been on the private party list. So.
You talk about the fact that it is... with the small D, one of the more democratic events, and that Linda, I mean, what are the ticket prices? It's
$50.
$50. So it's not like you've got to write a check with a lot of zeros to get in there. It's something that's accessible for a lot of a lot of drivers. Does that add to the allure? Do you get a different kind of race fan at an event like that?
Well, that's what I saw, and it was at the big tent that's buried by the golf course, you know, below the Brickyard. That's where, and I mean, it was full. I mean, it was packed, and so there were a lot of people there and a lot of fans. That's why I think I did make the emotional shift. I went, oh wow, this is cool, because they're getting a chance to be someplace and to celebrate something and be with drivers, and not just drivers, but a lot of people in the sport. So it was great.
We are talking about the Last Row Party here on No Limits. My guests are Lynn St. James, Steve Chassie, and Linda Jackson. We'll be back with Scott Goodyear right after the break. Please stay with us. I'm John Krall. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the return of the Last Row Party. I have here in studio with me former Last Row veterans Lynn St. James and Steve Chassie, along with Linda Jackson, who's with the Indianapolis Press Club Foundation, which sponsors the event and coordinates the charitable activity that goes with it. And we are going to be joined now by phone by Scott Goodyear. Scott, welcome to the program.
John, hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Terrific. Thank you.
Well, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked Lynn and Steve. What memories do you have of the Last Row Party? And then the second question is, what did you do with the check?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've started on the front row and I've started on the back row and a lot of rows in between at the Indianapolis 500. And when they have a party for the front row, I really got that. I mean, you know, that's something that you would expect. But when you qualified on the last row and they came and tell you, hey, congratulations, there's a party for you, it's just like, why do we have a party for starting on the last row of the Indianapolis 500? But I will say, a lot of fun, and everybody's poking fun at everybody. Everybody's there for a good time. And probably with the stress of the Indy 500 not running well or qualifying in the last row or what have you, probably was a highlight of the week as far as just being relaxed and not having to think about what you had to do on race day. So in question for the check, yes, actually, I was on the last row in 92 and 94, both taking over different cars for different various scenarios. The 92 check, the year of the McKenzie Financial car that we went from last to second, is with McKenzie up at their head office and in their memorabilia. The 94 check I actually have here in my office here in Indianapolis, and took it down to the Speedway just yesterday and let the guys take a picture of it. So the memory is here, yep. Indianapolis Press Club Incorporated for 33 cents. And at that time, I was embarrassed to go and into the bank.
I'm just marveling because he said, Scott, 92, you were on the last row?
On the last row, started 33rd. That's the year it went from 33rd to 2nd.
Yes, hello. And, I mean, what an that you almost won the race. I'm like, I'm just stunned, and I'm thinking of that.
Yeah, that's a lot of cars to
extremes.
Get through.
Extremes, well, or just this, talk about drama.
Yeah. Well, and I've got to ask, I mean, there's a lot of joshing that I hear amongst you drivers, and we talk about the joking, the roasting piece of this, you know, at the event, that's a big part of it. But do you guys give each other a hard time about, I mean, is the joke, does the joking go on outside the party or out, you know, part of the group? Steve?
Of course, that's half the fun of it. When when someone's going down the front stretch and you hold a wheel nut up to make them think, one of my wheels is not tight. You would do things like that. We used to anyway. They may not do it today, but we used to have great fun doing stuff like that.
But do you tease each other about finishing in the last row? I mean, is that something that yeah, Lynn, you're nodding your head. So
yes. Yeah. We're all called wankers when we qualify in the back row. But you know what?
I don't think I want to
only
ask
Only 33 guys in the country.
Yeah, make it into the race, and it is.
Well, except for the year when they did a special thing for Lynn.
That was not for me. Why do you? I wish you. You know, we didn't even have a party then. Let me tell you, there was no party that day.
Well, it was only for 31, 32, 33, not for 34 and 35.
We should have had our own party.
Well, clearly there was no budget for the 34-cent check and the 35-cent check. That they couldn't come up with the funds for that. So, Scott, I also asked Lynn and Steve, what was the best, and I need to emphasize, the best joke they told about you at either of the Last Row parties that is FCC safe here that will not get us fined?
Well, I think because I'm Canadian, I can just recall, although it was a long time ago, that both of them I got Raz, because you know, at 5'7", almost 5'8", not that big of a guy, so they were always ribbing me about. I loved hockey, wanted to play hockey when I was growing up, and they always said to me that here's a guy that thought he could be a hockey player, and hey, can you stand up for a second? And yeah, you stand up. You know, you're not very big and very tall, so I wasn't very good at it, anyways. But I mean, it's a love of the sport, and. So certainly along those lines, just taking a joke to me from the Canadian standpoint, being Canadian, and asking him if I'm wearing a snowmobile suit in race day versus a fire suit. Things that went along with it, you know, and that was okay. You know, in 1992, I wished I had a snowmobile suit on that day, if you can recall, because that was the day that it was like 38 or 42 degrees when it was freezing.
It was the coldest day in the history of the Indy 500. It's 55.
Yeah, and I remember it well because you just get going and you start working up a little bit of a sweat, and then you'd get a yellow, so you're sitting in the car and you're still going around at pace lap speed. And the cars back then were not that well sealed, you know, meaning that the air would flow into the cockpit and you know, give you a bit of a chill back then. The guys today in today's cars, because of the aerodynamics, the cars are so sealed up. I spoke with one driver yesterday, Jacques Villeneuve, who's now back after 19-year absence, and he said, you know, he can't believe how hot the cars are here because there's no airflow going through it. And that's basically because they become like a, you know, jet fighter. They're sealed up, and they're like a missile going through the air at 230, so you don't want to have any aerodynamic drag. So, yeah, but I can remember just sitting in the car and shivering and freezing, anxious to get going again. And that day we had so many starts and stops. It was a long, long day.
We are talking about the Last Row Party, the return of the Last Row Party here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Jim, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. Thanks. Hi to John and to the panel. I have a question for Scott Goodyear. Not exactly a Last Row based, but I'm just kind of curious what he has found easier, working as a driver for Eddie Cheever or working with him in the broadcast booth?
Steve, or Scott, did you get that?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I got that, and actually I'm chuckling. And let me tell you a 15-second quick story. In 1990, coming to the Speedway as a rookie and running the series full-time as a rookie was also Eddie Cheever's first season over here from Formula One. We got through the first races, and we got all the way up to Detroit. And the Detroit race was on the old F1 circuit at that time, which was a downtown course. It moved a couple of years later to the Belle Isle where it is at now. I was probably 4 or 5 from pit exit, and the first practice session on Friday morning, we leave and go onto the track, and obviously first time for everybody in IndyCar, if you're not an F1 driver, to ever see the circuit. Well, here comes Eddie Cheever, who's parked somewhere in the middle of the pit lane or lower back of the pit lane, roars out of there and roars around me on the outside of turn one because he knows the track and he's going to take off, and he drove over my front wing and broke my wing. So I push the button and go, you guys are not going to believe this. Cheever just da-da-da-da, told him the story. And so anyways, I get halfway around the track, and here's Cheever's car limping with a flat tire. And, you know, the session goes through. I get out of my car, walk down, and I go, hey, dude, what was all that about? What was what about? And I told him. He goes, no, I didn't. That went on. We didn't talk to each other for 6.5 years. And people are shocked at that because we now work together. And it was actually at the Texas race in 1997, when we did the IRL, we both transferred over to IRL. We were actually standing there and looking at each other and talking amongst a group. And then he just said, hey, you know something, this place is very dangerous, and we haven't been very nice to each other for many years, and we probably need to stop that. Otherwise, one of us is going to kill each other. So we shook each other's hand, and we were friends, but we, you know, were cordial to each other on the racetrack. And, you know, in the end result, when we got further along in IRL and I was going to retire, he asked me to come back for that 1 year in 2001 to drive for him. And in turn, we've now actually become friends, and we are working together. So, you know, and that just goes to prove that sometimes, you know, there's, you know, hardships between drivers. Pagenaud and Will Power, two guys that worked with each other on a team with Derek Walker, have had a run-in at Long Beach this year, and, you know, don't even talk to each other right now. You know, they've been on vacations with each other over the winter previously. So it's a love-hate relationship, and Eddie and I hated each other for a long time, and now we're actually working with each other. But driving for him was fun. Working with him is fun. I can't say one is better than the other, but we still have our disagreements. But,
and did you ever work out who was at fault with the incident when he drove over your wing?
Well,
or do you just not talk about it?
You know, I said to him, we never got to a conclusion of that, so I just tell him that it's my mistake and he's wrong. So
what is that? Are those sorts of stories common, Lynn, Steve? Where
you get the tensions, you know, that really can develop. Just, I mean, that was a great example, you know, that Scott just gave us, and I've had mine, and so it's just it's the tensions. I think, you know, you put so much effort, so much energy expended, so it's just. It's you're everything that you have in you is on the line, and then when you know emotions, it's not emotions at the time because you can't let your emotions while you're in the car have any impact. But it's when you get out of the car, and obviously a lot of egos at stake, and so tensions rise and crash.
What is the hardest thing? I'm
going to
ask all three. Well.
Good answer.
I guess I walked into that one. but in terms of, because I would think with the rhythm of this, you've got to get all geared up to qualify, and that's an achievement in and of itself. But then after that, you've expended all of that time and energy at just becoming one of those 33. And then, you know, the way the race is structured, I mean, you can run into a wall, you can have an engine blow, or, you know, something that you don't have a whole lot of control over happen within the first lap or two, and all of that work and effort just goes out the window.
It does.
I mean, how do you prepare yourself for something like
that? You get
that?
Regenerated. When qualifying's over and you're done, the next thing you look forward to is Carburation Day. Mm-hmm. And then after Carburation Day, you go through a little bit of a meltdown, and you get mentally and physically prepared for the race. You just start all over again, like you started the month of May. You were ready to go mentally and physically. You get beat up during the month of May after qualifying, and you've made the race. Then you can regenerate yourself again. That's the way I did it.
That was the hardest thing for me to adjust to, though, because we're used to a repetitive sequence. Practice, qualify, race. So whether it's over 3, 4, 5 days, you know, almost every competition is like that. And so the month of May for me was fabulous until there was no race. I mean, I'd already qualified. We'd already had carb day. And now what? You know, that letdown after carb day was like, I was like a zombie.
And then the parade.
Yeah, well, I didn't even get that part. I mean, I was a zombie by Friday because carb day was on Thursday. So, I'll just share, it was a great story to me. I got a call from Martina Navratilova, who's, you know, one of my heroes, and congratulating me on qualifying for the 500 and asked me how it's going. And I said, you know, it's great other than I'm a wreck because everybody's asking me what's my race strategy. I'm asking myself what's my race strategy. I've never done a 3x3 start. I am, you know, and the race isn't until Sunday and it's Friday, you know. And she goes, I just hear her, she goes, Lynn, I remember my first Wimbledon and my first U.S. Open, and she said, just live in the moment. You may put the conditioner on in the shower before the shampoo, but that's okay. Just live in the moment. And it just, you know, kind of clicked me into just realizing, quit thinking about the future and get out of my rhythm that I'm used to having. Just live in the moment. And so I kind of was able to make that shift from some good advice from a champion athlete.
We're talking about the Last Row Party here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Scott, did you find that part? Wait, I guess I should say psychologically, since you can speak to this, is it tougher to get up for the race from the last row or from the first row? Because I would think there's
He's
a difference.
He's the only one that can answer that in this group.
I wasn't going to say it. I wasn't going to say
it.
No, that's
all right. It's true.
I already walked into that whole 34th start thing. I'm not going to do that again. All right, Scott?
Well, you know, I think for me, I guess there's almost anything that goes on in the day when you're starting 33rd is a positive, you know. Mm-hmm. And I guess the strategy was so different than anything else I've ever experienced from the standpoint that you know, if you're up front or in the middle or what have you, you might have a bit of a strategy. But I think at that point in time, especially for me, who had never done ovals before I got to IndyCar. So, I mean, I didn't see an oval in a race car until 1990, until I was doing IndyCar. So by the time I got to 92, my first last row start in that year, that was probably my 12th, 14th oval of my life. So, and, you know, I think that shows in the race. When you look at the footage of me trying to get past Little Al at the end of it, I certainly look back at it now and just know some things that I could have done different and would have done different just to make the car not slide and get in dirty air. So my inexperience to his experience with him being there since 83. But for me, anything that we move forward, I guess our whole goal at that day was to be somewhere running at the end, number one, running, and then finishing, and maybe if we can find a top 10, we'd find a successful and then go on to Milwaukee at that particular time was the next race. But, you know, you get greedy as a race car driver because, you know, you're in the top 10, and then you go, all right, we need to be in the top 5. Then you're in the top 5, and you're thinking now you need to be in the top 3. And then when I get the third and then the second, it's all about, okay, well, maybe we need to try and win this thing. But clearly not enough experience at that point in time. You know, every other row, let me get to the front row. We're on the outside of the front row in 95, and my whole goal was to, because I had the two Buicks on the front row with me, guys that had just amazing amount of horsepower, to beat them to turn one and lead the first lap, because I didn't know if I'd be able to lead again because they had so much power. And so, I mean, I was a bit more focused on the start that year, if you can say that, and we got to turn one first, and we led, and about a ton of laps that day in a sense. But, you know, so I guess it's the pressure you put on yourself. I love Lynn saying, about, you know, I may have put the conditioner on before the shampoo. So I think that's, you know, because you really, there's just, it's a day after day after day. And even doing television now, I mean, you just, nobody understands until they live it being some part of a race team or this event, how consumed you are morning, noon, and night to get ready for the race. And I recall, even went back then when we had a week off before the race itself, we were already working on setups and talking about the next couple of events, so we were prepared for that. So, you know, we're here at Indy. All these guys are here at Indy right now, but, you know, the very next week they got to get in the truck and get up to Detroit and Texas. So it is, you know, it is our Wimbledon. It is our Masters, but there's a lot of races going on to win the championship.
Scott, I know we've got to let you go. You've got a crowded schedule. I'd like to thank you very much for joining us.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm glad the last row party is back. Might attend it one of these days, but in a whole different
you
format.
Should
definitely
so
I'd probably
come.
Enjoy it a lot more.
Yeah, well, Linda actually is going
to
invite you.
You're officially invited. Be our guest, Scott. We'd love to have you.
I appreciate that. That's pretty pretty funny thinking that it's now back in a sense. And as a race car driver, you enter Indianapolis never thinking you'd be going to that thing, and then at the beginning of the show, somebody walks up to you, hey, congratulations, you're going to a party. Well, thanks, guys. Enjoy it.
Thank you very
well.
Much. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we probably, Linda, ought to tell people if they do sure. want to attend the party, how they where they can get tickets.
Yeah, if you're intrigued by all these stories and you want to have a good time on next Thursday, May 22nd, go to IndyPressFoundation.org where you'll see a link that says Last Row Party Tickets. And that'll take you to Eventbrite. It's $50 for ticket. Provides food and drink and just the good time for the entire evening. So we hope you come out. It's going to be in the Pagoda this year. That'll be a little change of pace. But we think it'll be fun, be close to the track, and hopefully good weather, too.
We are talking about the return of the Last Row Party here on No Limits. My guests are drivers Lynn St. James and Steve Chassie. Also, Linda Jackson, who's the Vice President of Development for the Indianapolis Press Club Foundation. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the return of the Last Row Party here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I've got with me in the studio Last Row veterans and famed drivers Lynn St. James and Steve Chassie. Also, Linda Jackson, who's Vice President for Development for the Indianapolis Press Club Foundation, the organization that puts on the race. We also were talking with Scott Goodyear just before the break, and, you know, he was talking about something I found fascinating. I'd like to get your thoughts on how, you know, your mindset changes as you move through all of this, that if you get into, you know, your goal first is you come here and you want to qualify. You want to be one of those 33. When you are in the back row, how do you approach the race? I mean, what is your thinking? Is it first, I want to just try to get up, you know, move up into the top 20 or what? I mean, what sort of stages?
I think first it's just surviving the first exactly. corner. I mean, really, a lot of bad stuff's happened in that first corner over historically, you know, over the mm-hmm. years. And actually, I think I've heard this, and I think I would concur that it's probably, you know, reasonable piece of advice. You want to be in the front or the back, because the middle is where, I mean, you just get stuck sometimes, you know. Mm-hmm. And so if you're in the back, you can assess what's going on, even though you can't breathe. And at least you couldn't because of the methanol before. I don't know about the methanol now, but and your eyes water. But you usually have a chance to kind of still really assess, I mean, you know, more what's going on than when you're in the middle. And so I think it's survival first and get into the rhythm, you know, get into your rhythm and assess what your car is doing and all of that. I mean, even though I think it's changed, the pace has changed from when I ran and maybe, you know, Steve, when you ran too, that I mean, it's much more of a sprint race for everybody now than it kind of used to be. I think it was more of an endurance race where you kind of worked your way, you know, through the race. Mm-hmm. You know, you had a race pace at the beginning and a race pace in the middle kind of thing, and then a race pace at the end. Where now I kind of, after just watching, because I do watch them every year, mm-hmm. I see that it's a lot more, you know, of a sprint race where they're running almost completely. And I'm not saying you're holding back, but I'm just saying you really have to kind of assess the situation when you've got 33 cars out there. But now that there were, 32 cars, I think, running last year at the end. So, yeah. I mean, you know, it's you definitely aren't thinking about what your finishing position or what group you want to find. You want to, you know, just a comfort zone and a rhythm and who you're running with in the beginning, I think, and assess what's going on in front and survive that, whatever it is.
I'm going to ask both of you this, and it might be a little touchy, but it is something I think people are fast. You know, you use the term just survive that first turn. You know, this is a sport where people do get killed. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that? I mean, when you're, you know, getting into the car and you're sitting there at the wheel, and of course you're in a situation where you know your eyes are going to be watering and all sorts of things are going to be affecting your perception. I would think that the stress of thinking, you know, if I screw up here, I'm done.
You don't think about that.
When I said survive, I'm thinking more of
keeping the race alive, finish the race.
But you know, I'm getting through clean. I should have said maybe getting through clean, because you want to get through those first corners clean. Yeah.
You don't think about the possibility at all.
No, when you get in the car on the start of the race, before they start the car and all the crowd is there and it's busy as heck, your heart pumps. But the minute you get in the car and you flip that switch on and the engine comes alive, you're thinking about nothing but driving that race car. Period. That's it. You don't think about anything that's happened or going to happen. You drive that race car and you think about how aggressive am I going to be, how hard am I going to try to get by the guys in front of me, am I going to give it a little time to sort out, but you don't think any bad thoughts.
If you're ever thinking about that kind of a result, you know, the potential of that kind of result, I've always said, then you don't belong in a race car. I mean, you need to get out, because that's not something you should be thinking about. I mean, you know it. I remember the first time I saw somebody killed at a racetrack, so it became a reality that it could happen, because, you know, as opposed to just being a piece of information that, you know, you've read about in statistics.
When and where was that?
It was in West Palm Beach down in Florida, in a Sports Car Club of America race, an SCCA National. And so it was, it was a reality. So once I accepted that it could happen, it could happen to me. At that time, I was married. My husband also raced, and I realized it could have happened to him. And I actually found the wife of the driver. I didn't know him. I didn't know her. But I wanted to talk to her because I was able to reconcile all of this. It forced me to either say I can do this and I'm okay with this, or I'm not. And I was. And so I wanted her to know how I felt as a driver and as a wife. And that I was hoping it might help her, you know, to kind of reconcile what she had to deal with. But then that's it. I mean, then you know. You don't want to die, but at the same time, you really want to protect that car. I mean, without a race car, you're not a race car driver.
Yeah.
And so you got to know what the car's feeling. You got to feel what the car's doing. You're one with the car, but so you really are. I wear the car is what I call it. I mean, when I sit in that car, I'm part of that car. And so, you know, so you don't want to put it in the wall. You don't want to do anything stupid. But at the same time, you're not thinking of the consequences in that framework. You know.
I don't know how all the race drivers think, but I think most of them think like I thought when I drove, is that it's not going to happen to me. It's going to be somebody else, not me. I never considered the fact that would be me someday.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way you have to approach it, I think.
Now, was safety a consideration or worries about your security when it gets to be time to retire? You know,
no way, I'm still racing. I am. I'm going to be racing in the vintage race here on June 6th through the 8th. And I'm racing in a Formula Atlantic car that's just as fast as I can drive it, frankly, as fast as my brain can process. Yeah. So,
for some reason, that reminds me of a great story that the famous Cleveland Indians fastball pitcher, Bob Feller, told guy who supposedly could throw harder than anybody. History says, I still throw every bit as hard when he was in his 90s. I still throw every bit as hard as I ever did. Ball just doesn't get there.
Exactly. Yeah. And see, unlike Lynn and a lot of the other guys, when I quit driving race cars, and I've never been in a go-kart, a race car, or anything since the day I quit. And I never will. When I quit, I've been there, done that, had my fun, done.
Do you miss it?
Not really.
Hmm.
Not really. I think about, I watch the races and I think about how much better I could do.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I don't think about doing it again ever.
Mm-hmm. And I love getting in a go-kart. I go out here at Newcastle with my friend Bill O'Connor,
mm-hmm.
who, you know, goes out there and has some really cool go-karts. And when I go to run a vintage race in Sonoma or here when I run Indy, I mean, I have my Indy 500. You know how Scott was talking about how I'm already working about gears with my crew and what speeds are we turning. I want to get the car set up. I just love the whole thing. And so I get as excited when I pull into a racetrack. I mean, not as excited maybe as I do with the Indy 500, but I usually have to find the bathroom right away. And I'm pumped. I love it.
Well, and these are the kinds of conversations and the kind of interaction that you traditionally get at the Last Row Party, right?
Well, that's
Linda?
True, because everybody's different. I mean, there are some similarities. We're all a little probably wired a little differently. But we
get
all
a
have
chance to actually talk with the drivers there, right,
yeah,
Linda?
And
absolutely.
Get their view, you know, of what it is. And, you know, and I do remember when Tony Kanaan was on the Last Row and how that, I remember seeing the articles about, you know, him and how much he actually was just so glad to be in the field. And then, of course, then to go on since then and now become an Indy 500 winner. You know, I mean, the dramas and the stories and the emotion of the people most every driver that is in this race understands the importance of this race. And so whether it's your first row, your last row, or whatever.
We are talking about the Last Row Party here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's on your mind?
I would like to know who was the first one that both of them met that made them laugh, if they can remember, that, you know, broke the tension for them when they were at the 500, some way, you know, to just like, you know, go, whoa, if you can laugh, you don't have to be serious all the time.
Is that, you mean like among the drivers or just anyone
yeah.
Among the drivers, other drivers?
Yes.
Thanks very much. That's a good question. Thanks, Stephen.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Who was the first one who, and I'll is there any kind of like hazing rituals for people who, for drivers who show up at the 500 for the first time that sort of welcome you to the group, or is that?
Maybe for Lynn, because she was the lady, but for the guys, I don't recall that. I mean, I recall a lot of help from a lot of different people all through the field, because they want to take care of you so you can take care of them on the racetrack. But I don't remember any hazing.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't remember
or
hazing.
And anybody who made you feel at ease, though. Stephen's question was really,
yeah,
is there,
yeah,
somebody?
Well, it was really for me. Laugh. It was Dick. I mean, if you're around Dick Simon, you got to be, mm-hmm, laughing at some point, because he's. But I mean, there's nobody more intense. But at the same time, I mean, he is a hoot. And so there were times I would be, you know, like blown away in some of his stories, and some of them are in my book, because he's just so. I mean, he's just so crazy. So he really, even though he was intense, and even though he understood my intensity, he would have that certain levity at the time that I needed it. And, you know, so I think from the time, it would have to be Dick Simon would be my answer.
Now, was it difficult to, you know, Steve's made reference to the fact that as a woman, you were entering what was a pretty much an all-male fraternity there. Were there difficulties associated with that?
Not really. I think my difficulties were, I mean, I heard Scott make reference to something that I want to follow up on that conversation with him, because the Indy 500 was my first oval track race.
Uh-huh.
And only my second open wheel race. But the fortunate thing was that I had raced a lot in Trans Am and IMSA. And so most of the veterans that were here my rookie year in 92, AJ and Mario and Bobby, and mm-hmm, they knew that I was a racer. I mean, because they, you know, all the years, I mean, I was there racing as a support race often for the Indy cars. So I didn't just fall out of the sky, you,
yeah,
know, and show up. So, but at the same time, so my focus was, I have so much to learn. I mean, I still didn't know how to pass, and Scott was talking about that, which made me, yeah, feel a heck of a lot better. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, following John Paul Jr., who was also a road racer, and he had as a veteran, he was a bit of a veteran at that point, though, in oval track racing. And I remember during the race saying, oh, that's how you do it. Because, I, you know, you don't dive into the corner like you do on a road course, like you saw him do, you know, on Saturday out here.
Yeah.
And then you have to change your whole style. And so, and your whole, how you pass. And so I had to learn all of that. So being a woman, I mean, I had been racing for so many years. This is my 40th year in racing this year. And so in 92, you know, I was racing for a long time. So the woman part of it was, that's who I am. And, mm-hmm, this is what I do. And I love it. And if you don't like it, that's your problem. And
did they have the new garages when you first came there? Or were they wooden garages?
No,
still?
The wooden garages I remember seeing as a fan. But
okay,
no, they had the cement garages. So we didn't have the issue about that. Yeah.
But the ladies' restrooms didn't show up until the new garages
so
came.
It was pretty much all male.
Yeah, so.
It was,
yeah. Yeah, I heard about some of that. But, I mean, I changed most of the time in the garage.
Yeah.
We've gotten a question from a caller who didn't want to go on the air and is asking the two of you what the sensation is behind 10 rows of cars at the start, i.e. they get flooded with methanol, ethanol fumes, or is starting in the back, is it safer or more dangerous to start in the back? Or
depends upon how you approach it. Back there, when you start that race, it's like being in a dust storm.
Mm-hmm.
And like Len said earlier, you get all of the fumes from the cars in front of you. The whole car shakes, your head shakes from all of the air moving around. And it's really an experience to feel at once. It's tough.
Do you think it's safer or more dangerous, Len?
I think you can't really say. I mean, every race is different. It's a handful. But it's a handful to start that race, let me tell you. I mean, wherever you start, it's a handful. I mean, 3x3, it's the only time we're 3x3, even though it's a wide racetrack. And I actually remember Bobby Unser giving me advice when I was having this hard time on my rookie year, when I was saying, I don't know what my race strategy is. And he goes, Lynn St. James, you're a race car driver. Remember, this was on the radio. He says, you're a race car driver. He said, if there's a hole, you take it. If there isn't one, you don't try to make one.
He would have said, nah, honey,
yeah,
I tell
well,
you.
He did.
Linda, real quickly,
yeah,
could so that people know if they want to come to the Last Row Party, where they should go to get information and or purchase tickets.
Sure. Go to IndyPressFoundation.org, and you'll see a link for Last Row Party tickets. It'll take you to Eventbrite, where you can purchase your tickets there, and you'll have parking at the IMS. You'll have food and drinks. It'll be a great time. Hope you can join us.
And how much are the ticket prices?
Tickets are $50, and there's a little service fee on top of that. But it's for a great cause that supports student journalists, and it's just a blast. So as you can see from our guest today.
Yeah, they've got stories. Yes, Steve.
I was been thinking about the question that was asked about who might have helped us first there. And that's why I asked if Lynn was there when with the new garages, because I was there for the first few years in the old wooden garages. And out behind the old wooden garages is where Lloyd Ruby used to park his bus.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me out there and fed me full of whiskey after one night. told me, son, just you go out there and you just mind your own business, take your time, and you'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he told me. And I never could do that, but that's what he told me.
You were a little more receptive after all the whiskey.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
That's a great memory, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've got just a little bit of time left. What is, of all of the things that you've done with the 500, what's your favorite memory? I mean, the one that you find yourself coming back to the most often. Lynn, I'll start with you.
Well, I have way too many of those, but I'll share. I mean, one was the parade. I had no idea what, they said, you're going to be in this parade, because I'd never seen the parade before, and I'd been in some small little town parades when I was a little girl or whatever. I just never, ever imagined what it would be like to have a couple hundred thousand or whatever, 100,000, a whole bunch of people just yelling your name and sending them your love, their love and their support, wishing you luck. I sat down at a curb after the parade and just cried. I mean, I had so much, gift of it. I never had people just do that. I mean, and so I just, the overpouring of support that the fans give to the drivers when they, throughout the month, but particularly the parade. So that is something that I just totally didn't expect, and it was a treasure, truly a treasure.
Steve, in about 30 seconds, favorite memory?
Well, my favorite memory was my first time I qualified for the race, which was 1983, because I started in 1964 by building my own stock cars and then did sprint cars and midget and champ dirt cars from 64 to 81 before I got there, and then 83 before I made the race. And the first one I made is, I'll never forget that. I mean, you qualify for your first Indianapolis 500.
Mm.
It was great.
Well, these are the kind of stories we're going to share at the Last Row Party. You want to give the URL one more time?
Yeah, please.
Linda.
IndyPressFoundation.org. Please buy your tickets today. The event's next week, May 22nd, 7 p.m.
I'd like to thank my guests, Lynn St. James, Scott Goodyear, Steve Chassie, Linda Jackson, and Doug Bowles. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.